Hello, everyone, and welcome back to After Hours. I'm Kayla, and I'm so glad that you're here. We're back with season two, and things are looking a little different. First off, I want to give a quick shout out to Sarah Cortez. She graduated 2 years ago and is doing amazing work as a communication specialist at the Ventura County Office of Education. We're proud of her and everything she's doing. But with that being said, we're joined by someone new, the one and only Melissa Rodriguez. She's bringing a fresh perspective and a lot of honesty to the table. But don't worry, Ms. Sophia Bonwillis will still be joining us. We'll be talking about the stuff beneath the surface. Guilt, family, work, burnout, boundaries, and all the tension that comes with being the first in your family to do something different. So whether you're listening in between classes or just trying to unwind, we're glad you're here. This is After Hours. Now let's get into it. With that being said, I kind of want to start the conversation with the question. How do you explain work, ambition, and stress to your family who may not really get it?
Yeah, Kayla, honestly, I think that that is such a beautiful question to even start off with, because that is so relevant to being a first generation college student. I know some of the things, you know, that we do, as I know all three of us, we have multiple jobs, or we had multiple jobs in college, and we had so many organizations or clubs that we were in. So it's just like knowing that some of the things that we do might seem unfamiliar, or I would go as far to say unnecessary, especially the late nights, you know, and the multiple jobs like we mentioned. But trying to communicate that everything that we're working towards is not just for us, you know, like it's not just for us as an individual, it's for our family. Being in the first in our family to navigate through college and pursue a professional career, you know, we're doing it without a map. We're doing it without the guidance of our parents. And yes, we have mentors, and we've gone through that throughout the interviews in the past. You know, in the end of the day, when we go home and lay our head on our pillow in our house, our mentors aren't there, you know, and so we're really navigating that, like during our 2 a.m., emails that we're sending, we don't know for sure if we're saying the right things. So like I mentioned, it's not just for me. It's for my brother, who is younger than me, who is still in high school. It's for my sister, who is still in community. It's to let them know that, you know, finishing is possible. Like doing all of this stuff for yourself and for your family is a thing. And yes, stress comes along with it, but it's worth it. And, you know, sometimes, of course, you feel the pressure. Most times you feel the pressure not to succeed, but, you know, to make it count for all that you've done. And it is possible. And we did do it. We all graduated, and we're all paving the way for ourselves and for our family. So I think when you take that approach when communicating what our ambitions are or the stress relevant to everything, that's what makes it worth it. But what do you think?
Well, for me, I think it's more about finding like the right language or the right way to talk with them, because I've learned that my family might not understand like the specific demands of internships or media production deadlines that I have to deal with or networking events, but they do understand what hard work is and sacrifices and responsibility because of their experiences. And so even though they might not understand everything of the processes I have to go through, they do see the diligence and the dedication that I'm willing to put into my career. So instead of explaining every detail, I just try to connect what I'm doing to values that they can recognize, like independence, growth, or paving a path for others. And like Sophia said, I want to be able to share it with them. So that's more important to me, just being able to talk with them and being open. But I do understand that it's also overwhelming at times if they don't get it. I just might say that if I feel emotionally drained, I just might be honest and tell them that I'm working towards something that matters a lot to me. And I appreciate their support, even though it looks different to them. So there's definitely still guilt. I remind myself I'm not just doing it for myself, and I'm showing what's possible, like Sophia said.
No, I think you guys both said it perfectly. Like, I think language and the verbiage that we're using, especially with our parents, is very important when we're having these conversations, because Something that I struggled with at the beginning is hard work to myself and hard work to my dad, especially with having different professions and different occupations, it looks differently. So I may not be using my hands at times. I may not be out in the sun, you know, working, but I'm in an office and I'm doing other work. I'm sending emails. I'm talking to students. I'm creating events, things of that nature. So my hard work is like draining because I'm looking at a screen all day, or my social battery is depleted because of the amount of conversations that I'm having. And to him, he's like, you're in office with AC. Like, what's the big deal? And I'm like, I understand where you're coming from, but looking at a screen like for a whole day, like I know it doesn't sound as bad, but it can be draining on my part. So I think having those conversations and saying, my work just looks different from your work. And I don't think because I'm not using my hands and I'm not sweating outside, it doesn't diminish that. It's just different type of draining work. Because I know at times, even when I had homework and I'm like, oh, I'm working on an animation project or I'm building a website, they'll be like, oh my God, that sounds so fun. And I'm like, yeah, you think it would be fun, but I'm so drained right now. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. This is so confusing because building a website isn't just like putting pictures, colors, fun fonts. Like, it's coding. And I didn't realize that. So I think even just kind of using different language and kind of having those conversations where, like Melissa said, like, I'm just trying to work hard so I can end up going to that goal in the end. And also, like Sophia said, where it's like, I'm doing this for you and for other future generations, like not only just my siblings, but also my cousins, because my siblings and I were the first really to go to college and show my family, like, this is possible. Like, we're capable of doing this. So I relate to both what you, Melissa, and Sophia are saying. But I also have another question. How do you manage familial obligations while building your career? Because that's something what I struggled with a lot, where it's like, oh, I have to be on call for work, or I have to work. But there's also something that's really important to my family. Like, I have a it sounds silly, but I have a birthday party, or I just haven't been home in a while. So how do you kind of navigate that as well?
I'm going to be honest and say that I struggle with that too, especially because I feel like a lot of the stuff that I'm doing, it doesn't have like a set schedule, and that makes it difficult, especially when family events happen.
I think I can jump in on that. So I'm just, you know, guys, I am going to be honest with you. I'm type A, you know, I write down absolutely everything. So, you know, a part of being a part of so many things, especially as we were in college, like, we are kind of demanded to have time management skills. We are demanded to know our schedule weeks in advance. You know, I am someone who scheduled out like my first week of July in the first week of May, you know, like just to ensure I have everything set in stone, and then you can plan around it, you know? However, when it came to the stresses and the chaotic nature of just being in college and during the semester and having all of your responsibilities and your obligations, you know, it's hard, especially being on call. Like, you know for a fact you had that scheduled months in advance. And it's like, oh, like Melissa, like you mentioned, like, oh, I have a last minute barbecue that is to celebrate X, Y, and Z. So, you know, sometimes you have to miss out on things like that. And of course it's hard for your family, but it's also like hard for the individual. And it's important to even acknowledge that, because like, I don't want to bring the term FOMO in here, but the fear of missing out, not just because you think you're going to miss something at the party, but because you think you're going to miss special moments with your family, in which you probably can't get back. You know, none of us know the circumstances that we each other have or that our viewers have, but we have specific family members where we don't know is going to be the last time that we're going to be able to hang out with them, for example. So it's just, honestly, it's just to have faith that, and just to be grounded in the fact that this is for something bigger than ourselves. You know, our grandparents got a certain point, and then our parents got farther than them, and it's important for us to go farther than our parents. And so sometimes all good things, I'm not gonna lie, have sacrifices. And I would be lying to you if I said I wasn't so sad during my undergraduate, because I couldn't go to X, Y, and Z. But when dealing with all of these, like you said, these familial obligations, like some things take sacrifice, and it's whether or not we're able to do that. And so when it's communicating that to my family, I've just been so blessed with a family who has been so receptive of it. But you know, you can also tell. You can also tell, like, it's also taking a toll on them. And then that also takes a toll on you. So really, it's just an emotional strain, in my opinion, back and forth. But it's really just understanding that instant gratification will not surpass long-term success and long-term gratification, for that matter. Because I know that when we all are so blessed to just make it farther than our parents, we're going to look back and we're all going to have that conversation with our parents, like, you know what, that barbecue for my niece's third birthday, you know what, it was worth it. And who knows, maybe you'll treat your niece to her fifth birthday. Like, I don't know. It's hard, but being grounded in the fact that, you know, hard things take sacrifice.
That was beautifully said, if anything. But I get what you mean wholeheartedly when you're like, you're telling your parents, your family, where it's like, oh yeah, like I have this school thing or I have this work thing, so I can't make it to the barbecue or the birthday party. And they'll be like, no, it's okay. But like you said, it'll be like it just stings a little bit where you can tell they are bummed out. And it hurts. But like Sophia said, you have to, you know, kind of take a moment and take a step back and just weigh the overall, like, what is going to benefit me more. And also, sometimes you need to take a break from work and just go to that barbecue. And like you said, family, I'm sorry, will always come first to me. So no matter what, I will always have a job, whether it'll be that job, I'll find another job. But I know no matter what, my support system will always be there. And my support system is my family. And I think it's interesting, even as comm majors and Sophia with the comm minor, but you know, we see these studies being done all the time. And there's literally a study called The Guilt of Success, Looking at Latino First Generation College Students' Experience of Leaving Home. And the study basically encompasses and looks at the experiences of 6 participants and their feelings of guilt. Their findings reveal that the guilt was caused when the participants put their needs before their needs of their family and attended college. Institutions of higher education may not know or understand the importance family plays into these students and may not foster parent participation, therefore potentially leading to these feelings of guilt. That's why I think it's really, really important for first-gen students to have a cohort like this and to have some peer mentors or a group of someone they can lean on, because I may be talking to another student and they don't necessarily understand where I'm coming from because they don't have as many jobs as we do and they're not balancing as enough, or their parents have a different outlook of life. So I think it's just important to kind of have these conversations that we're having right now where it's like, okay, I'm not alone. Like, I feel a little bit better and I don't feel as guilty going to that internship or going to that conference that was out of state and I missed something. But I know, like, next time I'm going to go to that next outing.
And I do think that it's like a balancing act, especially right now. Like you said, we're not alone in this feeling, because right now when we're at school, when we're at work, it's like we're barely entering this stage of our lives. So it's very understandable to still not know how to balance family and work life and other personal issues, because it's a lot. It definitely is. So it's definitely okay to, you know, not know everything right away on how to balance things or how to decide whether to go to a family outing or choose work over that. It's just, know that it's okay not to know everything.
Absolutely. And honestly, Kayla, you hit the head right on the nail when you said, when you mentioned just having a community of people who understand where you're coming from. Because I think, one, it's just so easy to believe the notion that you are all alone in this and just to alienate yourself within whatever community that you're in. But it's also it is so hard and it's so challenging to push yourself to seek something like this. But it's also so vital for a student, for an individual. It doesn't even matter if you're first gen or not, like, just to seek a community who understands where you're coming from. And in our case, as first generation college students, like, I had all of these ideas, all of these things that I thought I was struggling alone. But then let's say I turn to Kayla and I open up and I said, oh, you feel X, Y, and Z too? Oh, okay. It's not just me. And then we talk about it. So of course, I think this is one, a challenging act just to go out and seek people if you don't already have that community. But I also urge everyone, if whether it's on this call or whether it's the viewers, but to also challenge yourself to open up, because there's nothing that can be gained when stuff is in the dark. It's not until you bring stuff to the light and you actually voice it, when you realize that you are not alone in this. And all of these challenges, all of these thoughts that you're battling, like, you really are not alone. And a lot of people are struggling through this. And I definitely urge that. And Kayla, I'm just so grateful that you even brought this up, because that's something so prevalent, especially within first generation college students that I've seen. Me, for example.
No, I agree. Like, I feel like I'm even still working on it now, where it's like, speak up, you're not alone in this. But you always have that imposter syndrome in the back of your head where it's like, no, I can do it by myself. I'm capable of doing it. I don't need any help. I'm being weak, or I can do better. And these negative thoughts will just always kind of start to creep in your head, but you kind of have to take a step back. And something that I catch myself doing now is, if it, what if Melissa felt this way? Or what if Sophia felt this way? And what if it was someone else? How would I react to them? I'd be like, don't make me mad right now. Like, tell me how you feel. You're not alone in this. And hearing that you're not alone in this, it sounds cheesy, but it makes you feel so much better after having that conversation. Because there's always a saying where it takes a village, but it really does take a village to, you know, meet your goal. You know, of course you can be individual and still be strong and independent, but it doesn't make you weak for, hey, you know what, I'm going to reach out to my mentor and just make sure I'm going on the right track. Or I just want to, you know, get her thoughts. Or maybe it's not even academic wise and you just want to talk to your mentor just to be like, about life. Mentors are not only just for academic and workplace settings. They're also just for being a human as is. So I think it's really important to search those different avenues and getting different support, because support doesn't only come in academic and a professional setting as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just about having people who remind you that you belong here and that your experience matters as well, and people who help you feel seen even when you're still figuring it out. I feel like that's all one really needs.
Beautifully said, ladies. But gonna kind of transition a little bit towards the next part of our segment, and that's navigating dual identities at work and home. So I know you guys are all familiar with the term code switching and what that looks like, and a lot of first generation students have a lot of familiarity when it comes to code switching, especially at work. But a conversation that I kind of wanted to bring up is, when is it, you know, like code switching, and when is it like also you're not being yourself at the time? So like, how do you kind of find that middle ground of like bringing your own individual identity, but still being professional in the workplace? You know, you still kind of have that code switch where I'm not going to say to my boss, like, hey girl, how you doing? But I'm going to say like, hey, like, you know, nice to meet you, but also still have my own identity in that. And I'm not kind of taking that whole part of it away. So how do you kind of balance the both of it, of maintaining to being professional, still bringing your own identity and perspective to it all?
I can start this off. So it's a given. We have like a lot of, I don't want to say selves, but we have like a lot of identities that we have to kind of go into, whether that's workplace, whether that's friendships or family. And I think on the basis of just, I had a lot of hard times code switching for my family and for the workplace, or for my family and inside the classroom. You know, as we are, we get to go to, we have the opportunity to go to college, and being in college, you know, we develop, let's say, a kind of higher vocabulary that's just normalized in our own vocabulary, right? For me, at least, and I'm still, honestly, I'm not going to lie to you guys, like, I am still navigating this, because although I think I'm a relatively calm person, I'm slow to anger in my opinion, but there's nothing that like stresses me out so much. So when I say a word, and then let's say, for example, one of my parents say, why are you using that word? Like, you know, I don't go to college, like don't use that word, like, you know, and they kind of talk down on themselves. And so it's really hard for me, at least, to code switch, because as time goes on, I understand how hard it is for my family if I just bleed that other identity into my house. But then it's like, that's also me. And how do I balance that? And I'm still honestly navigating that. But it's understanding your audience. And yes, does that mean you kind of have to work overtime, even though you think you don't need to because you're in the comfort of your house? Like, yes. But, you know, as a first generation college student, like, I also think I'm so privileged in even having that problem. Because yes, it's hard, but yes, my father got me through the 4 years of college, and I'm willing to put that extra brain power in. But, you know, on the basis of code switching, like, I don't want anyone to think that it's some easy game, because it's absolutely not. And you have to understand, like I said, your audience. But what do you guys think about that?
No, I think it's, you brought up something that I didn't even think about as well, is like code switching at home mostly. And no, I think we've even talked about this where it's like, oh, I'm just trying to encompass this. And they're like, you're not at school. Like, you don't need to talk like that. And I'm like, but that's just how I talk now. Like, you know, you go to school and you just, you gain a new vocabulary. And I also get what you mean, Sophia, when you say like, I don't want to hurt their feelings in a way or make them feel dumb or belittled, because that's the language that I'm using. It's just a new language that I'm learning because of school and, you know, everything that I've learned from there. And it's really hard to kind of navigate, like, you know, this is how I talk now, but like you said, knowing your audience, and it's not only for work now, but it's also like at home, just knowing that I'm going to have certain conversations at work that I wouldn't have at home. And I'm going to have certain conversations at home that I wouldn't have at work, and just kind of navigating that. But I think something that I feel like a lot of first gen struggle with is the loss of individuality within it all, because you're like, wait, what kind of person am I if I'm constantly code switching? I'm code switching at work, I'm code switching at home, I'm code switching with my friends. Like, who am I in a sense? Like, not to have an existential crisis, but honestly having an existential crisis where it's like, what kind of person am I? Because the pressure to conform causes people to suppress their identities, just overall leading in disengagement and also loss of creativity. And we see this once again, particularly with first gen students, because everyone code switches, but people from minority backgrounds do it more extensively. And it even shows that, you know, you can be drained after it because you're almost playing a part almost. And if you think about that, that could be draining, because at the end of the day, even at work, like talking to a bunch of students, you have to be professional and you have to maintain a certain kind of image. I come home, I don't want to talk to anyone. Like, I'm done. I don't want to have small talk. I feel bad, but sometimes I don't want to talk to my roommate just because I'm just tired and I just kind of want to shut down and decompress. And I feel like, I don't know, like Sophia says, like, I feel like I'm still trying to navigate that and I don't know how to necessarily.
Because it can definitely still be mentally draining. Adapting and having to code switch, I feel like you mentioned, it's a lot more common in first generation students. And I feel like it doesn't mean that we're losing ourselves. It just means that we have the ability to survive in like different environments. And that flexibility is something powerful that, you know, that we've had to learn, but it's okay to acknowledge that it's hard and it can wear you down. It's definitely a shared experience, and I feel like it's still something that we got to navigate through.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're all on the basis of just all this code switching. We're all on the topic of all this code switching and just making sure that we're having these specific decisions on what verbiage we're going to use or what, you know, nonverbal cues we're going to use. But making numerous decisions, even small ones, can lead to mental fatigue and impaired decision making. And guys, I'm reading this off of Google. Like, this is an actual thing right now. And it's called decision fatigue. Like, this is because our cognitive resources, like willpower and mental energy, are finite. And they're like a muscle, you know, they can be overworked. And that's where brain fog that comes in. That's where just overall mental fatigue comes in. So, you know, when you're feeling tired after, Kayla, let's say you're talking to all of these students, like, there's a reason you don't even want to speak when you come back home, you know? And also, like, you know, I think that knowledge is power. Like, the fact that this is an actual thing that gives you power, knowing like, oh, I'm not just weak. Oh, this person probably is going through that too. But that's also where having a community and discussing this, like we mentioned before, comes in handy, because I thought I was weak and I thought I was the only one that went through mental fatigue, or I called it brain fog, until Kayla said, oh, I actually have that every day. And I said, oh, okay, like, let's go through this together then. So there's so much power in one, knowledge, but also in community, which, yeah.
But might I just add, decision fatigue is a real thing. And as soon as you said that, I kind of lit up, because for the viewers who do not know, I actually work at a private high school, at a boarding school right now. And I'm working primarily, at least right now, for the summer with freshmen. And I remember I was talking to a teacher and she saw something on TikTok where it's like, I'm going to click how many times a student asks me a question. And she did that. Guess how many questions she answered in just one day?
Oh, gosh.
And it's okay. Just, I was like, can I go to the bathroom? Like, just like anything.
I'm going to say 150.
I'll say like 200. 200.
Not even close.
400?
Like, I think she said like 400, not 500 and like 20 something. It was around 500 and it was like early. I was like,
Wow. No wonder you're so tired at the end of the day.
And it's just, you don't realize it, but like, just like the questions that they pile up, and also just making like simple decisions. Like, can I do this right now? And also with these kids, they're freshmen. They're like still 13, some of them. So it's just like, it's same kind of questions of like when you're on a road trip and a kid will keep asking like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Like, it's always another question, another second. And I didn't realize it was catching up on me until she said it. Cause she asked me, she's like, oh, what are you going to do this weekend? Like, are you going to explore around the city? And I was like, no, I'm going to sleep in and maybe binge watch a show. But yeah, like, I don't feel the need. She's like, you should go out. And I ended up going out and just kind of walking around. But it does get to you, like making those little decisions, they pile up on you and you don't realize how draining it is. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that I think we can get from this episode is just find your community, find your village, find your people, and just talk. Like, I think that's the biggest thing as communication majors and minors. I feel like once you talk about feelings, stuff comes out. And this is why I really like this segment of our First Generation Professionals Project, is just because it takes a second where we can all really just sit back and really just talk about, like, we're not alone in this, once again, as cheesy as it sounds. But would anyone else like to say anything before we wrap everything up?
Some advice to be able to find your community is just trying out new things, especially on campus. I feel like there's definitely a lot of resources. There's the student organization, there's Associated Students, Inc., there's the peer mentors as well that are provided if you need any academic help as well to relieve stress. There's the student union also, just to have some type of space where you can hang out with others, get a snack, because sometimes that's all you really need, a little break. So definitely just seek out the spaces. They're definitely out there for you, and they make a world of difference in feeling seen, supported, and being authentic.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just kind of going to build off of Melissa. For those who don't go to CI, all of these places exist wherever you may be attending school. Or even if you're not in school, all of these places do exist. The challenging part is kind of just looking it up. Like, this information is at like the tip of your finger. And I think the challenging part is just putting yourself out there. But I promise you, like, after you step out of that initial fear, a world of just opportunity awaits you. And, you know, the world is your oyster. And all of these places are here for you, to cater to you. So, I mean, you got this. And yeah, Kayla, I think you said it all though.
Well, one more thing, because you guys just keep bringing up amazing topics. And I feel like this relates to it, is just like Sophia said and Melissa said, stepping out of your comfort zone and finding those avenues and those resources. But if you haven't listened to Sophia's episode, I believe it was with Adrian Rios too, something that they talked about. And she told me right after she interviewed him, and she was like, I don't know why I haven't thought of it, but like, it makes sense. they were basically talking about reaching out, trying to find networks and peers. And he was like, go on LinkedIn and email someone and say, I want to take you out for coffee. Or let me take you out to coffee and pick your brain about your job. How did you get to where you're at today? And she told me something and I laughed, but it's so true. Well, he said it. And everyone loves to talk about themselves. So if you pay for a coffee, they're going to yap about themselves. And I think that was such good advice. And don't get me wrong, you're going to get some no's, but you also have to get comfortable hearing no, because it's going to happen. But once you get, you know, with that comfortability of hearing no, you're also going to hear some yeses as well. I mean, we even experience it when we're looking for interviewees for this episode. We'll be like, hey, we think you'd be a great fit. Like, we want to hear your story. And sometimes it just doesn't work out and they don't have the capacity to do it. But yeah, so that's all I have to say, is just really step out of your comfort zone and don't be afraid to, you know, be that person. I mean, even like Melissa right now, she is trying to break her way into the film industry and I can't wait for her and to see when she does that. But a lot of it, like she said, is going to these film festivals and sometimes she's by herself and you just kind of have to approach that person. And it goes the same thing when you go to conferences. You see a professor or you see someone that you're interested in. You got to practice that elevator pitch to yourself real quick. You know, take your little hors d'oeuvre that you have and all your pamphlets that you have. Go up to that professor and talk to them. It's scary and it's intimidating, but you're going to stumble over your words at times. But practice makes perfect. And that's why, honestly, the best advice that I can give to anyone is you're going to feel silly, but I practice like while I'm doing my makeup or I'm getting ready for the day. If I have a presentation or anything, like I'm talking to myself and practicing what I would say. Don't be afraid. You're going to hear some no's, but you're also going to hear some yeses. And I just don't want that to discourage anyone.
You kind of have to motivate yourself, but that doesn't mean that you don't have what it takes to get out there. And you're very deserving of the success that will come to you.
That part too, knowing that when you do get success, you're deserving of it. Because I'll be
like that.
No, I'm just winging it. Like, everyone could do it. Like, it's okay. Like, no, celebrate yourself. But thank you so much, ladies, for joining me this lovely conversation. We will be talking soon, so I hope you all tune in very, very soon. But with that being said, I hope you all have a lovely day. It's been a pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you all again.